The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's October the 25th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And later in a half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment, too, with all the day's agricultural news, including an item from the Bush administration that supports a permanent disaster aid title for the 2007 Farm Bill. Research information from North Dakota that shows it is economically feasible to turn wheat straw into ethanol. And a quote from Chicago yesterday where the U.S. Energy Secretary said ethanol is the best alternative for the United States, but not necessarily if it's made from corn. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take up the Herculex yield guard debate for corn as it concerns the Western corn rootworm and the U of I's Urbana, Illinois test plots. Oh, and along the way, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour, as it always does, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willag.org and put the AM580 agricultural podcasts to work for you.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialist, on the web at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat, after surging higher, finished at 516 and three quarters, down 5 3/4 for the day. The March futures at 533 were off a nickel. December corn futures settled at $3.27 after making a new contract high. 333 and three quarters was their high today. The overnight contract high at 334. They finished up 2 3/4 for the day. The March futures at 339 and a quarter, up 3.5 cents. And the May at 345 and a quarter, up 3 1/4. July futures in the corn pit, $3.50 even, up 2.5 cents, that for the July 07 contract. And November beans now, 622, they were off a penny and a half today. January futures at 635 and a half were off 1.5, and the March contract at 643, down a penny and a quarter. November beans next year at $6.66, down 3 1/4. December bean meal futures at 185.20, they were off 40 cents. December bean oil at 26.58, and they were off 6 for the day. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished at 106.70 in the October, unchanged for the day. October live cattle, 89.40, up 17.5. December up 22.5 at 88.57.5, 100 weight. And the lean hogs finished at $61.47.5. They were up $1.62.5 for the trade. December corn futures for next year, we didn't pick that number up. We'll read it to you now. December 2007 at 339 1/4, and they finished a half higher for the day as well. Taking a quick look at the outside markets, crude oil futures up $2 at this hour, $61.50 a barrel to trade. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down just about 11 points at 12,143 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and the outside markets is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Hi, Todd. Nice to talk to you.
New contract highs in the corn pit today, but they weren't able to hang on to those gains. They followed the wheat up as best as I could tell, and the wheat surged sharply higher, and it fell back for losses. What'd you make of the trade?
Okay, in corn, we understand that there was reports that China has been aggressive selling corn in the world export market, maybe 2.6 million tons of known sales, but they're basically wanting to slow things down because I'm sure the Chinese understands, you know, supply-demand tables as well as good traders in the United States. as a result of that, the corn market stayed strong, and we did see selling pressure in the wheat and soybean markets, but as you mentioned, we did stay strong. The continuation of poor yields in the Midwest, higher crude oil prices, all gave corn a strong close.
At this point, and as of yesterday, we were looking at an outside week. Whether that's up or down has yet to be determined. Are you concerned about this week as a breakout potential one way or the other to the upside or to the downside?
You know, I'm still of the opinion that if we get confirmation with the November USDA production report of a smaller crop, you know, it just adds more fuel to the fire to increase corn acreage 5 to 7 million tons. We're even having the Secretary of Agriculture go out and say, you know, the farm program needs to focus on ethanol and replacement energy for the future. And, of course, I think the administration and the country, you know, wants renewable energy and, you know, giving price supports on corn and soybeans to accomplish that goal is probably, a real surprise by everyone that the Secretary's leaning in that direction.
Speaking of the Secretary, did you hear that he mentioned disaster aid payments and making them permanent? We'll hear about that a little bit later, but I just thought that that was pretty amazing for the Bush administration to consider that.
Well, it's election time frame, Todd, and the election's awful tight right now, so there's a lot of nice things that can come out of everyone's focus.
One of those nice things that can be said that might not be coming true later on, I suppose. All right, let's talk a little bit more about these marketplaces. Beans today, while they managed to follow the corn and the wheat higher, they didn't keep hold of those gains. I don't know what you made of that, but it looks like it was a pretty weak close today.
The soybean market was also stronger, and a couple factors that, you know, we continue to no combines are running full throttle in the Midwest. We get the feeling that the forecast dried out just a little bit. We still hear the idea that later beans, particularly in the north part of the state and Iowa, aren't shelling out quite as good as expected. The general feeling, Argentina started to sell beans at some values that basically took some exports away from the U.S., but it closed very strong. We're still in the height of harvest, and the soybeans did sell a little lower in late sell-off. And it was just in the last 3 to 5 minutes that soybeans break into the lower for a lower close.
Speaking of Argentina, and I don't know whether this is kind of an off-the-wall question, but what's the possibility that they'll put more corn in the ground in Argentina at this point rather than beans?
Well, I imagine that's like asking a Champaign, Illinois farmer that's, on a 50-50 rotation if he's going to change. But I'm going to say that there's still those agronomics that encourage, you know, a rotation in Argentina just like anywhere else in the world. We know it is more expensive to raise those commodities with anhydrous ammonia and nitrogen products than in South America that it does cost here in the U.S. But, you know, as a general rule, there'll be some pencil sharpening, but my hunch is that it's going to be pretty close to rotation-type agriculture.
And what's your feeling about December 07 corn contract?
There's this very strong debate if in the spread issues and acreage issues, and one thing that we're starting to hear news, market commentators talking about is at what price level will the rationing process take place as far as poor usage in either exports or feed usage. We remember when corn went to 540, mm-hmm. and very well, and what our general impression is that this is a change in the game in which some of the old problems that we had haunting us, where poor exports would basically slow demand down and make the equation fit, are not really that big a factor when we have this new ethanol deal. You know, we're continuing to see on a daily basis new investments in that industry. And with Wall Street here up and with crude oil up, I would imagine that any investor that owns stock in an ethanol plant is pretty darned happy today.
And the exports continue to stay good, and they were reported as good this week again for the corn, despite the higher prices.
That's right. You know, the other thing is some people, Ag Resources is harping on the fact that maybe with higher prices we are slowing down exports, but really the U.S. market, what the proven fact here is longer than some people hold off buying, it might even cost them more in the long run. So that's an important fact, and we're really here at harvest time when the basis levels are fairly cheap. And maybe we will see a pickup in exports with this Chinese conversation about slowing their exports down.
Speaking of coarse grains, maybe we better talk a little bit about the Australian wheat crop. The Australian Wheat Board today lowered their estimates, and that came down, I think, to 9 to 12 million metric tons. And then there was some chatter, apparently, on the floor of the Board of Trade that crop could be as small as 6 million metric tons. They export a lot of wheat, or have in the past, but they're not going to be able to do that this year.
Yeah, the only one big problem here is we haven't really seen the soft red exports pick up in the world. Running to the U.S. for that problem. There's also this story about, 30 million deliverable wheat that's going to be delivered on the December contract. But at some point in time, if demand shifts, we promise you fireworks in the wheat market. Also, there's a big acreage being planted of soft red winter wheat. There is this general feeling that no matter if it's soft or hard or white milling wheat, it's going to be a very tight supply-demand deal, and it's going to be a long-watch market as we get into the early winter, and there'll be lots of twists and turns in the marketplace.
That's kind of another question I had, because you mentioned both the hard and soft and the white or the spring wheats, durums and such, and that are traded in Minneapolis. It seems to me, I think that Australia raises hard red winter wheat, and you really can't replace soft and hard. They go into two different products or a set of different products. Why should Chicago really track so well with Kansas City on this one?
Well,
why should it take the lead for that matter?
A couple things. We understand, a couple of weeks ago, and it's announced now that Russia is offering wheat, and the Europeans seem to have a smaller supply of the wheat. But, what really happens here is there is some subtle substitution of those different wheats in some of their granulation and in their milling processes. And one of the factors here, of course, is, we had some problems with Argentina wheat, but with a robust world economy, it doesn't take too much of a shift to realize that Chicago wheat could become very valuable, and it doesn't take much in the price equation for that to happen.
Paul, we appreciate you being with
us
today.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us to take a look at the ag weather forecast. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight in West Central and Southern Illinois, cloudy, some rain. In far northern and eastern East Central Indiana, partly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, some rain arriving. Lows tonight from 32 in northeastern Indiana to 45 in far southern Illinois. Tomorrow, Ed says, in the far north, mostly cloudy, showers arriving, elsewhere cloudy, widespread rain. Highs tomorrow from 44 in west central Illinois to 54 in the far south. The ag supplement for the day tomorrow, wind speeds at 8 to 16 miles an hour. The minimum afternoon relative humidity ranging between 70 and 90%. The extended two-state forecast, scattered showers will continue in the north, with periods of rain continuing in central and southern sections right on through Friday. The most significant rainfall on Friday will be in the southern third of Illinois and Indiana. Dave Dickey's here now with the news.
In agricultural news, the latest soybean rust count puts the disease in 209 counties in 15 states, including Illinois and Indiana. Experts say for the rust to return to the Midwest in 2007, the spores would need to build up in regions where no killing frost occurs this winter, allowing spring winds to carry spores northward. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says a permanent disaster aid title needs to be part of Farm Bill 2007, but details are still sketchy.
Really seeing the need for some effort that deals with the ongoing annual disaster problems we have. Whether we do that through a crop insurance plan or a different approach to farm policy, I think is the debatable point.
Congress may take up agriculture disaster aid for the 2006 crop year when it returns for a lame duck session after the November elections. North Dakota state economists say a study of turning wheat straw into ethanol looks promising. Researchers say if the average annual price of ethanol is $1.80 a gallon, a wheat straw plant producing 50 million gallons of ethanol a year could turn a profit. Researchers are hoping for a $1 million grant from USDA for further studies. Meanwhile, Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman yesterday in Chicago said ethanol is America's best alternative energy source for the future, but researchers must develop alternatives to corn. Bodman says, and this is a direct quote, "Eventually we're going to run out of the ability to make ethanol from corn." Earlier this week, Indiana Senator Richard Lugar cut the ribbon for an E85 pump in Boone County as part of a statewide energy tour. Lugar says he expects Conservation Reserve Program acres to be planted to corn in 2007.
I think a number of those millions of acres will be needed for commercial corn and soybean production. I would in favor entering them back into that production. I think it's vital to our country that we utilize that. I understand very well because we helped try to produce the program to begin with, the conservation aspects of it. And we'll have a number of those that continue. But we're going to have to think seriously about our energy future and our security. We'll have to think furthermore about cellulosic ethanol in the future. The use of corn stalks, switchgrass, even fast-growing trees that are on acres we don't even consider productive now, but are going to come into Indiana agricultural income.
Lugar predicted that 20% of the 2007 corn crop will go to ethanol. Yesterday, the London-based International Sugar Organization predicted that fuel ethanol consumption in Brazil, the U.S., Japan, China, India, Thailand, and the European Union will more than double by 2010 to about 80 billion liters. In 2005, those nations consumed 33.7 billion liters. And researchers at the Clean Tech Venture Network says investment of U.S. clean energy technology was a record $933 million in the third quarter of this year. $512 million went to ethanol and biodiesel. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, this past year, University of Illinois researchers put YieldGuard BT up against Herculex. Both are a genetic modification, as you know, of the corn plant that protects it against damage from the western corn rootworm. We'll have more on the results of the trials. Corn farmers wrapping up the 2006 harvest are quickly turning their attention to seed selection for the 2007 season. This past year, University of Illinois researchers were able to compare for the first time, at least in head-to-head trials, two BT technologies most farmers will consider. U of I Extension entomologist Mike Gray explains the plots put YieldGuard up against Herculex for western corn rootworm protection.
And we conducted those head-to-head comparisons at three locations in Urbana, Monmouth, and in DeKalb. And what we found, I think, continues to be very interesting and verifies some of the earlier research conducted in 2004 and 2005, and that is that at least in the Urbana location, the YieldGuard rootworm BT treatment has suffered more late-season root injury than we, quite frankly, would like to see.
Gray says by August the 8th, the YieldGuard rootworm treatment in Urbana had about 1.5 nodes trimmed away from the corn plant. That's much greater damage, he says, than he'd like to see.
Now, I should point out, when we compare the Herculex rootworm and the YieldGuard rootworm BT at the other two locations where we also had very significant pressure, particularly in DeKalb, we really don't see a separation in terms of those treatments, at least not nearly as dramatic as occurred in Urbana.
The question, of course, is why is the rootworm damage greater in Urbana, Illinois?
And we think it has to do with very impressive densities of the variant western corn rootworm in Urbana. Certainly, we've got variant western corn rootworms in the DeKalb area and more recently in Monmouth, but not at the level, not at the densities that we have in Urbana. And we think, again, based on some circumstantial evidence at this point, that the variant may be certainly more aggressive, may be able to inflict more injury on YieldGuard BT rootworm hybrids in the east central Illinois, in the Urbana location, certainly.
The variant form of the western corn rootworm lays eggs in soybean fields. The original rootworm does not. The variant appeared for the first time in the mid-1990s north of Urbana. It has spread slowly to the west, but inhabits much of the eastern corn belt. Gray says farmers in western parts of Illinois and the western corn belt should consider the two types of BT rootworm protection equal. He suggests those in east central Illinois choose either the Herculex BT or a soil-applied insecticide. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Time now for our weekly discussion of the cash grain market on Wednesdays, of course, with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Well, let's talk about this marketplace. It went sharply higher for a bit today, and in the overnight trade made new contract highs in the corn pit, and then in the bean pit, at least, as well as in the wheat. It settled lower, but corn managed to hang on to just a bit of a gain. What'd you make of all that trade?
Well, you know, really, as far as I'm concerned, this market defies logic. It's just it's wild, and the farmers are taking advantage of it. We're still struggling with harvest, Todd. We're probably got still a third of the beans left out in the field, and we're not even half done in corn. But I consistently buy 50,000 to 100,000 corn every day, and they're selling all the way across. In the new crop in January of 08, they're selling out of the bin, you know, over the scales, and so there's just a lot of excitement out there. Discussed it because they contracted too soon. But other than that, yeah, they've been selling into this market.
Yeah, they sold beans as well?
Well, yes. Believe it or not, they're selling beans over the scales or contracting out of the field what's left out there, maybe even bringing in out of the bin because, you know, and I'm sure they'll probably make some money on if they DP the beans. But really, we hit $6 today. We didn't end up there. But, I mean, you can't beat that. That's a gift because, I mean, beans are just following corn on up. And fundamentals and beans just don't warrant $6 beans. So they're selling a lot of those, too.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give us your bids and tell me about that gift for the day.
All right. Our cash corn today is $3.10. Cash beans are $5.89. And new crop wheat is $3.92 today.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. She joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather with meteorologist Drew Lerner. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan has declared that names and qualifications of unsuccessful state job candidates should be disclosed, but Governor Rob Blagojevich's administration won't comply. Madigan Public Access Counselor Terry Mutchler says in a letter that state administrative rule, which has the force of law, clearly makes so-called eligible lists public record. The Associated Press was denied copies of lists for two jobs given to people with political connections in 2003. Blagojevich's hiring practices are under federal investigation. The Department of Central Management Services under the governor says it's bound by a 1984 appeals court ruling that releasing applicants' names could embarrass or harm them. But it released an eligible list for a different state job to the AP last fall. A final report from a year-long brainstorming effort is taking shape. Champaign County residents were asked about their wishes for the county as part of the Big Small All planning project. This morning, about 40 people gathered at the Assembly Hall to consider the top priorities in the report. The effort's been criticized by the county's Chamber of Commerce for being too anti-development, but the co-chair of the project says that wasn't the intent, and the wording of the final report may prove differently. The future shape of the University of Illinois' Orchard Downs complex is up for discussion at a public meeting tonight. Four developers will present ideas about transforming the U of I's graduate and family student housing complex into a mixed-use development open to more students or faculty. A federal judge has ruled that Indiana can block a California-based group from making automated calls attacking a Democratic congressional candidate. Back in September, Indiana Attorney General Steve Carter sued the Economic Freedom Fund after receiving 12 complaints about the pre-recorded calls, which are prohibited by state law unless the person getting the call has previously agreed to take it. The company that made the calls for the Economic Freedom Fund, a company called FreeEats.com, later filed a suit against Indiana claiming the ban is an unconstitutional restraint on free speech. But a judge ruled today the ban against automated calls does not violate the First Amendment nor restrain interstate commerce. Four rare stringed instruments got an unusual ride from their home at the Smithsonian Institution to the university's Krannert Art Museum. U of I alumna and co-founder of Black Entertainment Television Sheila Johnson delivered the Stradivari violins yesterday on her private jet because they couldn't be shipped by regular means. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now to take a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What you been watching in the weather forecast for the Midwest?
Well, it looks like we got one more big storm system to deal with over the next couple of days, and that is going to generate more precipitation, probably looking at 0.3 of an inch to an inch of rain generally, maybe some localized amounts up to 1.5 inches. The only hope that we have that something might change here is that there is tropical moisture coming up from Mexico, from Tropical Storm Paul, and there's a chance that that moisture feed will actually support better storms in the Delta and prevent us from getting the heavier rains further north. But right now, the models are still suggesting widespread moderate rainfall across the eastern Midwest. That will obviously set us back again, or continuously, as the case may be, in that field work across the eastern areas. But after we get this storm out of the way, it looks like a surface high-pressure system will come down from Canada and set over the Midwest for a little while, and that will shut off the Gulf of Mexico as a moisture source, and that should help us to see a little bit better drying conditions as we go through most of next week. That doesn't mean it's not going to rain, but it does mean that the rain amounts will be pretty minimal and somewhat poorly distributed across the region. And we'll also see temperatures in a mild range, which will be a little bit warmer than what we've been seeing. And that should also help to stimulate some better drying conditions.
And then if you move to the southern hemisphere and check in on the bean crop that's being planted in Brazil and Argentina for me, please.
Yeah, it looks like we got a little bit of rain in the past day or so in parts of southern Argentina. There will be a follow-up storm system that will come on here for Thursday and Friday, and that, in combination with what occurred yesterday, should put us in a pretty good position for continued favorable planting weather across that country. There is still some dryness in parts of west-central sections of Argentina in the states of provinces of Cordoba and Santiago del Estero. These areas will probably get some improved rainfall as we move deeper into November, but it may be a while before the northwesternmost part of the crop production region actually starts seeing enough precipitation for us to quit worrying about the dryness. But that's really the only place. Most of Argentina and Brazil are in real good shape right now and will stay that way. Brazil is seeing a good mix of sunshine, warm temperatures, and some scattered showers, and that's just going to be a pretty good situation overall for planting and early season crop development.
I know from time to time you do some long-range forecasting for the United States. Are you capable of doing that with the data that's on hand for South America?
Yes, to a certain degree. Now, there's not quite as much data for us to use, so the statistics are a little bit weaker. But given an El Nino event that we have here underway, there is statistical evidence that El Ninos tend to support higher than usual yields in corn production across Argentina. There's also a similar relationship with the wheat crop and also the sorghum crop there. Soybeans, however, the correlation is pretty weak. In fact, it's pretty much could go either way. And I think the main reason for that is that soybean crop is a later crop, and usually Argentina tends to go, if they're going to have a dryness issue in an El Nino year, it tends to come pretty late in the season. And I think that's one of the reasons for that. In Brazil, of course, El Ninos are almost always wet years across the majority of the country. Usually starts off a little dry in the north and then gets wet later on, and in the southern part of the country usually starts off pretty wet and then turns a little bit drier. But in general, it's a good production year for most cases in Brazil.
Thanks much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's closing market report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. I'm Todd Gleason.